At 8, it's Positively Revolting Talk Radio, hosted by Ani and Lynn. A variety of topics from an eco-feminist and anarcho-feminist perspective. At 9, it's One Land, Many Voices. Zaha Hassan and Ned Rorsch are the hosts. They explore political, social, and cultural issues affecting Palestine and Israel. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, news, and interviews and commentary, hosted by Chris Andre. Stay tuned for Flashpoints at 10:15, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Jacob Rubin joins KBOO's Francis Fagan to discuss his debut novel, The Poser. The Poser is a strange and delightful comic novel that at its heart speaks to the power of performance, impersonation, acting, and what it means to find the essence of someone and of yourself. At 11:30, it's a special report for Making Contact on the political on the politics of coffee. That's all right here on KBOO, your community radio station. If you're not yet a member of KBOO, you can become one now by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Good night, Jackie.
Good night, Robert.
And stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Another chapter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement has been leaked by WikiLeaks. These newly leaked classified documents show that the secretive deal, if it goes through as written, will dramatically expand the power of corporations to use closed-door tribunals to challenge domestic laws. These laws include environmental, labor, and public health protections. For more on this, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with intellectual property expert Sean Flynn.
Sean, could you start by telling us about the leaked chapter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership that has just come out today? What does it consist of?
So the leaked chapter today involves the investor-state dispute settlement part of the chapter, which is the ability of private companies to bring suits against sovereign governments challenging regulations that impact their investments.
So what does this mean, kind of in layman's terms?
So, well, what the chapter releases today is there's been a lot of controversy around the ISDS systems for a number of cases that have been brought by private companies that really kind of test the borders of their ability to challenge public regulations. And what the ISDS chapter shows that leaked is basically the new version of the TPP is not responding to any of those controversies by actually limiting the ability of private companies to bring these kind of suits. And indeed, what we see in the chapter is that the ability to bring these kind of suits has been expanded to include the ability of companies to challenge limitations and exceptions to intellectual property rights, like the copyright fair use system, for example, or the ability to revoke patents when they're not properly granted.
How would this be used? What are some potential uses by companies that are using this type of provision? What are some examples?
Sure. We have a couple examples that are ongoing in recent litigation right now. So one is by tobacco companies and the other is by pharmaceutical companies. So tobacco companies have brought cases against Uruguay and against Australia, arguing that the restriction of their ability to use branding on cigarette advertising on their cigarette packages is an indirect expropriation of their intellectual property rights, and they're demanding compensation from those governments. And then separately, pharmaceutical companies, the company Eli Lilly has challenged Canada for a court decision that Canada took invalidating two patent extensions on old 1970s medicines. The Canadian courts essentially said you could not get patents on new uses of existing products. And that decision is being challenged as an expropriation of Eli Lilly's intellectual property and its medicines.
So given that this involves medicine and tobacco, could these uses or these ways that the companies are challenging actually end up costing lives?
They could cost lives, and they would cost it by potentially getting rid of meaningful health and safety regulations and cost-saving regulations that governments bring. Basically, what this does is give corporations another bite at the apple, another way to challenge government regulations that it doesn't already have now.
In your statement about this newly leaked chapter, you note that the text contains these same provisions used by Eli Lilly and Philip Morris in the examples you just mentioned. Is there any indication in the way that the text is worded that representatives of these companies may have been involved in the crafting of this chapter?
Well, we don't know about those specific companies, but what we do know about how trade agreements are prepared and negotiated is that there are panels of industry and primarily old industry representatives that gain access to text that is otherwise secret through the process. And this is through the Industry Trade Advisory Committee that allows corporations inside access to the USTR. And the general public and public interest organizations don't have that same access. So for us, for academics, and for the general public, this leak that came out today is the first we're seeing of this chapter, whereas many corporations and corporate representatives have been seeing it all the way through.
And one of the issues are these trade-related intellectual property rights, which were first brought out by the WTO and involved in also the North American Free Trade Agreement. Can you explain to our listeners what that means, these TRIPS or trade-related intellectual property rights?
Yeah, so the big issue here is really around how international intellectual property obligations get enforced. So there are minimum standards for every country to have certain kinds of intellectual property that are part of the World Trade Organization agreement. And that agreement is called the one you mentioned, Trade-Related Aspects of Intellectual Property Rights Agreement, which we call TRIPS. So TRIPS put in minimum standards for granting, requiring countries to grant patents and copyrights and things like that. But the only way to enforce those standards, because they're at international law, is through international litigation that's state to state, country to country. Only a country can bring a trade violation in the WTO. What TPP would do that is different is allow private companies to bring those complaints directly against other governments. And that would include directly against the United States, or it could include United States companies suing some other government. And the trick is with the way corporations are structured is basically any corporation can find itself to be in another country. So it really expands the possibility of bringing this kind of regulation challenging local regulations. Challenging regulations.
How is it that companies, multinational corporations, are able to bring a complaint directly against a government in cases like this?
Right. Well, these chapters, these so-called ISDS chapters, go back a long way, and they actually go back to a very good and longstanding international principle, which is that when a country, a foreign country, confiscates property to nationalize it, when it transfers ownership from a private entity to the public, which governments have every right to do, but they must compensate for that exchange of property, for that expropriation. And that's what we call a direct expropriation. What's new and starting at about and around the time of the NAFTA agreement is that that concept has expanded to what's called an indirect expropriation. So that applies to government regulation that affects the value of property but doesn't necessarily transfer the ownership of that property to the government. And that's what really opens up the really broad problems that we're seeing and the controversies around these agreements and why you're seeing such kind of interesting and actually quite aggressive cases being brought against companies, particularly recently in the intellectual property area.
And one thing also that you point out is a potential for a challenge to the fair use doctrine, which is used extensively in the United States, allowing for educational or other use of what is patented intellectual property. Do you see that as being a potential challenge to the United States from another company or another country that could challenge our fair use doctrine?
It absolutely could happen. So the current text permits that kind of a challenge to be brought. And the reason it permits it is that it has a clause within the agreement that says essentially that ISDS panels, these investor state dispute panels, have the ability to determine whether any kind of local regulation is consistent with the intellectual property chapter of the text. And and then it has a new footnote, and this is the new part that we've seen today, making clear that that consistent with standard applies to any limitation or exception from intellectual property rights. And that's what fair use is. Fair use is a limitation of copyright that allows people to use and copy that work for a number of different purposes in which the public interest in that use outweighs the private interest. And there are those within the content industries around the world that think that that fair use right in the United States is too broad. And the current TPP text fairly explicitly permits companies to make challenges of that kind, to say that we don't believe the fair use right is consistent with the limitations that are permitted under the free trade agreement. And instead of that kind of litigation being country to country, no real country wants to bring that claim against the United States, the TPP chapter would allow private entities to sue the United States or other countries about their limitations and exceptions specifically.
The negotiation for this Trans-Pacific Partnership has been incredibly secretive. How have we been able to have this text made public? Who leaked it, and how are we able to see it at this point?
All we know is that this morning, all I know, I should say, is that this morning a copy of the investment state dispute chapter appeared on WikiLeaks. And I saw it on WikiLeaks and read it along with many other people. And so people are now able to start talking about and reading this one chapter of the agreement. But it's also important to note that most of the agreement is not public at all. The grand majority of this agreement has never been leaked, and it's never been willfully published by governments. Governments have never sought public comment on it or shared what their ideas on. So it is accurate to say that the negotiation is very secretive, much more secretive than would take place, for instance, in Geneva-based treaty negotiation bodies.
But there have been, I have read up to 400 representatives from corporate entities that have been a part of this negotiation, that have seen the text of these potential chapters of the trade agreement.
That's right. So in the United States, our trade law, which is currently being negotiated and potentially amended in Congress, permits only a select group of, as you said, about 400 corporate advisors who sit on industry trade advisory councils, which the administration has recently opened to include lobbyists. So lobbyists may sit on those, corporate lobbyists may sit on those committees. Those individuals, basically Washington insiders who represent mostly big industries and corporations, are able to see the text of every U.S. proposal to the negotiation before it is given within the negotiation. But the general public doesn't have that same access. Actually, the trade proposals from the United States on behalf of its citizens in these forums are declared top secret under U.S. law and can't be legally shared with anyone outside of the industry trade advisory system.
So the public is essentially shut out of this process and not able to either find out what's in the text or present any type of public comment on it?
That's right. Not until it's finished. So once the treaty is finished and the deal is done and the country signed, then it will be publicly released. And only then, after it's too late to change it, will the public know really what's in the final agreement. And at that point, Congress will have to vote on it. And the big debate in Congress right now is whether the Congress should give their authority right now to the president to approve the details of the TPP that they haven't seen yet under what's called Trade Promotion Authority legislation.
Also known as Fast Track, as we're hearing about the fast tracking of this Trans-Pacific Partnership in Congress. I've been speaking with Sean Flynn. He is with the Program on Information, Justice, and Intellectual Property and with American University. We've been speaking about the newly leaked chapter from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You can find Sean Flynn's most recent article, a brief overview of the top concerns with the U.S. leaked Trans-Pacific Partnership intellectual property proposal at infojustice.org. Sean Flynn, thank you for joining us on KBOO today.
It's a pleasure.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59, just rolling over to 6 p.m. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
Hey, fellow weirdo. This is Rich, host of Radio Lost and Found. Be sure to check out the show on its new time slot. That's every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour mediascape of found records, tapes, found sound, internet insanity, and more. That's Radio Lost and Found every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
Hey, weirdo! Come out and play!
Tune into KBOO every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D. Hard Knock Radio features in-depth interviews and profiles